from deep inside your radio.
Yes, it's a brand new Le Show Dome. Can't tell you how much money they've spent on this thing. And I want to thank them. No, they didn't do it just for me. Don't be like me and get carried away. But it's the same shape. It's in the same place as the original Le Show Dome. They put a new glass wall in. Can you hear it? I'm reverberating against it. So people can come into the studio and still not be heard. Now, of course, you need a key to get into the studio. Why would you come into the studio with a key in order to talk on the air while somebody else is talking? But now we can prevent that. And more phone lines. We won't be taking calls today. Thanks for asking. It was worth the money, whatever it cost. Please give. Ladies and gentlemen, I just am returned. Just you can still hear the whatever it is in my nose, a stowaway from Prague in the Czech Republic. No, it's not Czech. There is no Czechoslovakia anymore. They changed their name a while back to Czech Republic. And they're changing it again to Czech Please because they think that'll help based on the performance of public radio. You may have lost, this may have slipped off your radar screen, but the Czech Republic split off from Slovakia a few years back. So just another one of the post-World War I map drawing projects that failed. These guys at least split up peacefully. So some sort of award goes to them. And you find out when you go there, first of all, go there. Once they take care of the mold problem, you won't get this infection anymore. You know, the city flooded last year, and so there's mold everywhere. But it's beautiful, unbelievably beautiful city. But, you know, we still think, if we think of Prague and the Czech Republic at all, we think of Václav Havel, the great hero of 1989. But things have changed. Even sweet little countries move on. Havel is now spending most of his time in on the Portuguese coast, nursing the half a lung he has left. And he's not suing the tobacco company, so you crybabies out there, take a lesson from Václav Havel. Go to Portugal and don't sue. I don't know how he can afford to go to Portugal, but apparently a tobacco lawyer didn't play a part in it. It's an amazing place. First of all, they have a little thing there called history. We'll be looking into it in a while, but they've got it now. And for the 800 or so years, 800 and change, that the Czech nation has existed in one form or another, I think it's about four decades in the 800 years that they've been independent, that they haven't basically either been learning Russian or German. So now they're learning English. And the new Václav, not Havel, but Klaus, who's the new president, well, you talk to some Czechs and they say, well, Václav Havel was a little too eager to kiss the American hem for their taste now, you see. But still, if you check back, the Czech Republic was part of the Coalition of the Willing. And indeed, the new president, Václav Klaus, sent a regiment, a brigade, a battalion. I was not in the military, ladies and gentlemen. All groups of military are the same to me. Regiment, company, brigade, battalion, platoon. It's a bunch of guys in uniform. That's all I know. Sent one of those, a specialized unit dealing with detecting of chemical and biological weapons. Now, the Czechs know a little bit about this because, of course, they made the Semtex that you probably remember. If not, Google it. Don't bother me. And they sent this unit to Kuwait just in case the Iraqis attack Kuwait with weapons of mass destruction. The Czechs were there to detect it. And the president, Václav Klaus, did indeed promise his countrymen that under no circumstances would the troops cross the border into Iraq. So it just, in answer to the question, how willing was the coalition? That's exactly how willing they were. Hello, welcome to the show.
I took a trip on a train and I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane and I thought about you. Two or three cars parked under the stars, a winding stream, moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam the same old dream. And every stop that we made, oh, I thought about you. And when I pulled down the shade, then I really felt blue. I peeked through the crack and looked at the track, the one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you. There were two or three cars parked under the stars, winding stream, moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam the same old dream. And then I peeked through the crack and I looked at that track, one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I thought about you. That's why I came back to the... Hello, welcome to the show. I didn't really think about you. No, I did. Sure, I did. Sure, of course I did. Same way that I had rappers come in and put the scratches on that pristine CD version of that song, because you have to these days to give it authenticity, to answer the question that you're no doubt not asking yourself right now. I was in Prague for the European premiere, ladies and gentlemen, don't you know, of my film, the film I wrote and directed, Teddy Bear's Picnic. That's right. You can't see it in Chicago or the west side of Los Angeles, but you can see it in Prague. That's called targeted distribution, you see? And I am glad to be back, however, if only because I believe today I was informed that the show network was being joined in July by a new station in Cincinnati. Now, I don't know if their lack of precision in saying in July, so you don't mean in July, whether that means the beginning of July, the end of July, the middle of July, or never in July. It's like when East Coasters say California. Or Californians say East Coasters. It's just that damn imprecision. But if, in fact, we're on the air today in Cincinnati, hello, Cleveland. Welcome aboard. Before Arnold Schwarzenegger runs for governor of California, I think he has to get one thing clear. Who is the real Terminator? Those of us blessed with long memories and cursed with them may remember the 1988 presidential campaign when Arnold Schwarzenegger, campaigning in behalf of President George Herbert, then candidate George Herbert Walker Bush, denounced his opponent at rallies around this country by saying, Michael Dukakis is the real Terminator. Remember that? Say you do. Just humor me. I'm back. I thought about you. This week, Dateline Baghdad. Arnold Schwarzenegger joined U.S. troops in a former Saddam Hussein palace at Baghdad International Airport. Oh, isn't that same airport that Time magazine says U.S. troops vandalized? Yes, it is. For the screening of his latest movie. Well, I can't poke fingers. I went to Prague. He just went to Baghdad to premiere his movie. It's the same thing, really. It's really wild driving around here, he said. I mean, the poverty, and you see there is no money. It's disastrous financially, and there is the leadership vacuum, pretty much like in California right now. So, score one for Arnie. He said to the soldiers, however, quote, I play Terminator, but you guys are the true Terminators. So is it Michael Dukakis or the American soldiers? Because he meant it as a negative when referring to Dukakis, apparently, unless he was kidding. Unless everybody's kidding. Everybody is kidding, ladies and gentlemen. That's what you need to know. Now, for the first time in a long time, a sporadic feature of this broadcast. It's been months since we had occasion for this. Tales of airport security. But it's summertime, you know. Everything's ramping up. I can tell you about mine. I'm flying way too much. I can tell you that right now. And three lines to get on the plane in Prague. Three lines, ladies and gentlemen. Three lines. And then three lines in London to transfer over. And but the good people at Virgin tried something interesting. They tried to charge me $150 because the travel date on my full fare ticket had changed due to the illness of a relative. The lady actually said that'll be $150, and I said, no, it won't. And she backed down. Here's a lesson for you. But anyway, dear Harry, after arriving from London and clearing customs at Raleigh-Durham Airport, all transit passengers had to go through security, despite having been screened getting on board at Gatwick. Everyone, even babies, had to remove their shoes. When my wife's walking stick triggered an alarm, she was asked to sit aside. After her shoes came through the machine, I passed them to her, and the entire security team went on her alert. Her shoes, bag, and stick that had already been x-rayed had to go through again, and she was given the wand treatment. The reason? She had touched her shoes without authorization. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know, people talk all the time about legacies. At Richard Reed, he's got a legacy. That shoe bomber, man, that is a legacy. I'll tell you right now. We'll get to the important stuff moments from now, but Australian actors, and I'm going down to the Antipodes in a little while. So I have a couple things to check up on. And I just want to alert you now so you'll know what I'll be researching when I'm... And it won't be which way the water goes down the toilet. I can assure you of that. I've already checked that out. But here, Australian actors here, right here in the paper. Look, I'll read it for you. Well, I'll stop that and then I can read it for you. Australian actors and musicians may soon claim Botox injections as part of their tax returns, after a landmark decision in Britain to approve such claims. Because some performers claim they need Botox to maintain their appearance for jobs in film, television, and stage, the British Tax Office has agreed that they can claim the cost of the procedure as a tax deduction. It's easy to prove. You could just go into the tax office and look, see? It doesn't move up here now. Botox injections are yet to fall into the category of valid tax claims for performers in Australia, but a leading tax accountant has revealed there is already a loophole for such a claim from Australian actors. This is from the Age newspaper in Australia. I'm sure several people will try it for Botox just as they would with liposuction, said Ray Regan, president of the National Tax and Accountants Association. I also have no doubt some taxpayers have already endeavored to claim these procedures at tax time. Regan said Botox injections would not qualify for a work rebate under current tax laws. Actors and performers might be able to claim a 20% rebate for any excess costs of a medical procedure that costs more than $1,500. If the procedure was a genuine medical expense performed by a qualified practitioner, then the person has a right to claim a 20% rebate above the $1,500 mark. Botox and liposuction would be approved in that category. Now, on the other hand, if I just do it out of my station wagon, I guess that doesn't count. I guess that's not good enough. Britain's Inland Revenue has approved the listing of cosmetic surgery, teeth whitening, breast implants, and Botox injections as tax concessions if they can be proven as a business expense. The breaks would apply only to those who could prove the procedure's boosted career prospects. Politicians need white teeth, don't they? Speaking of which color, the U.S. Embassy in New Zealand has lodged a complaint with a New Zealand brothel that calls itself the White House. After brothels were legalized in New Zealand this month, that's not why I'm going down there. Ladies and gentlemen, please, I have important business. I have Botox to get in New Zealand. Brothels were legalized in New Zealand this month. Who knew? Apparently the Kiwis did. The White House in Auckland, which previously described itself as a massage parlor, advertised for prostitutes in a newspaper advertisement last week. The ad, which said the brothel was, quote, looking for more ladies, to join the day and night shifts, unquote, appeared with a logo almost identical to the U.S. presidential seal, showing an American bald eagle with a ribbon in its mouth holding the arrows of war and an olive branch. We believe any likeness of a national government symbol in a commercial advertisement is in extremely poor taste, Embassy spokeswoman Janine Burns told the Auckland Sunday Star Times. Is that really true? Would we object to the fleur-de-lis being used in a beer ad? Like, who would use the fleur-de-lis in an ad right now? But you know what I'm saying. We are sending a letter to the advertiser that expresses our disappointment and displeasure about their choice of symbolism, spokeswoman Janine Burns added. The White House General Manager, Scott McGregor, the general manager of the brothel, that is to say, just to avoid any confusion in your mind, ladies and gentlemen, our White House doesn't have a general manager, nor ladies on the night shift. The White House General Manager, Scott McGregor, told the paper the establishment had used the logo for almost 2 years, adding, it's a universally recognized symbol. I don't think they've got exclusive rights to it, unquote. So as long as it was a massage parlor, we didn't object. Only when it became something else? I'm not clear on that. I'm not sure I'm clear on that. Let's put it that way. But I'm going down to Auckland this week, and I pledge to you, I will investigate. And now, ladies and gentlemen, another copyrighted feature, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
The inbox is groaning with the weight of the apologies. Dateline New Orleans, the question preceded Jamie Foxx. Will he talk about his arrest in New Orleans as he MCs the world's biggest rhythm and blues festival this week in the Superdome? Soon became, will he talk about anything else? According to the New Orleans Times-Picayune, the comedian and actor, Thursday's main master of ceremonies, expounded at length on his April arrest following an altercation with police at Harrah's Casino. I love New Orleans, most of y'all, he said. Later, he prostrated himself to reenact his handcuffing and asked, did you all see the surveillance tape? I got my ass whipped. I apologize for acting so crazy, unquote. Sir John Stevens, the Scotland Yard commissioner, apologized to the royal family for the appalling breach of security which allowed an intruder to gain access to Prince William's 21st birthday party at Windsor Castle. Aaron Barshak, who was dressed as Osama bin Laden, gained entry by scaling an embankment, climbing a tree, jumping onto a wall, and reaching a terrace. The commissioner has tendered apologies to the royal family. This seems to have been an operational failure, which should not have happened, whatever the circumstances. An operational failure. I don't know what that means. I guess it means whatever we say it means. It means it's not a policy failure. We didn't intend for that to happen. From Lakeland, Florida, the Lakeland Ledger. Tom, want to try that?
The Lakeland Ledger?
Yeah, good. A baseball column published under the headline, Phones to Start Ringing, by former Ledger News staff member Jim Freem on June 22nd was virtually identical to a column, Ken Rosenthal's Insider, that appeared in Sporting News in its June 16th edition. The Ledger has apologized to the author for plagiarizing his work. We also apologize to our readers for misrepresenting material as our own. We thank the alert reader who brought this transgression to our attention and for believing the Ledger's standards were violated. What happened to Jim Freem? No indication, ladies and gentlemen. No details at press time. Greg Dyke, the general manager of the BBC, has apologized in private to the Conservative Party of Britain for the partisan way the corporation covered the results of local elections in May. He accepted that the BBC got it wrong on election night after studying a detailed dossier. The BBC had agreed the coverage was tilted too much against the Conservatives. BBC, of course, is in hotter water over its news story that claimed, based on a single intelligence source, a high-ranking intelligence source, that the Tony Blair government, specifically its spinmeister, Alistair Campbell, had ordered the sexing up, quotes, of the first intelligence dossier on Iraq weapons of mass destruction published last September. We'll get to that, more of that, in a moment. But this is the great apology of the week, because it's not an apology. Silvio Berlusconi expressed regret for comparing a German member of the European Parliament to a Nazi concentration camp commandant. As anger over his remarks continued to reverberate across the European Union, the Italian Prime Minister telephoned Gerhard Schroeder, the German Chancellor, in an attempt to conclude an affair that has severely damaged the new Italian presidency of the European Union. Mr. Schroeder said the German government accepted the expression of regret, and other EU leaders tried to calm the anger surrounding Berlusconi's comments. Except that the next day, he denied having apologized, saying he merely expressed regret at the confusion. Hey, I got that apology, not from Berlusconi, but that's worth nothing. Dateline Boston, Bishop Richard Lennon apologized this week for the Boston Archdiocese's failure to make an expected settlement offer to hundreds of people allegedly molested by Roman Catholic priests. Tom?
Allegedly molested?
Yeah. A 30-day moratorium on litigation and victims' lawsuits against the church ended this Friday, the latest in a series of freezes intended to force or foster settlement talks between plaintiffs' lawyers and the archdiocese. It expired without producing a settlement. The archdiocese's inability to make an offer was causing new pain for victims of their families in the church, Lennon acknowledged. I'm sorry the resolution is not at hand today. I understand that the lack of resolution of the settlement causes further pain, mistrust, and spiritual alienation for the victims, and that it seriously impedes the healing process, not only for them and their loved ones, but for the whole church. He said a deal with victims is still his top priority. Settlement remains out of reach because church officials could not reach an agreement with the insurers of the archdiocese. The archdiocese is apparently in good hands. Dateline Broward County, Florida. A report card mix-up caused panic for thousands of Broward County middle school students. When they got their final report cards in the mail, they indicated the students would be held back despite their passing grades. It turns out a programming error caused the problem for more than 6,000 students. The school district apologized for the mistake and will print new report cards. The high-ranking Iraqi nuclear scientist who led U.S. officials to hidden centrifuge blueprints and components told CNN that U.S. officials nearly overlooked him and even detained him after he came forward. Badi Obeidi, who'd been the head of Iraq's gas centrifuge program before the Persian Gulf War, said he hid the parts in his garden 12 years ago under orders from Saddam Hussein's son, Qusay. He said he decided to cooperate with the United States days after American troops entered Baghdad, but said he was afraid to talk to U.S. soldiers. He was held for a day before the problem was straightened out. David Kay, the new weapons inspector for the CIA in Iraq, blamed the mistake on a lack of coordination. U.S. Central Command apologized in a statement. Mr. Mahdi Obeidi's detainment was unfortunate. Detainment? Isn't it detention? And we're working with other agencies in Iraq to avoid this happening in the future. Eight retired army generals in Chile have apologized for digging up secret graves containing the remnants of anti-government activists and then throwing the bodies into the sea. Nice people doing nice things. More than 3,000 people were killed or disappeared during Augusto Pinochet's brutal crackdown on opponents, and hundreds of bodies have never been found. Last week, a judge in Chile began legal proceedings against five former members of armed forces on charges of illegally exhuming bodies. Human rights groups believe the corpses were removed to hide evidence of mass killings. So he said, I'm going to hide the evidence. It's right there. An American newspaper has apologized to suspended British Labour Member of Parliament George Galloway over allegations he was paid millions of dollars by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. The Christian Science Monitor, which accused Galloway of accepting payments totaling $10 million in return for promoting Saddam's interests in the West, has admitted the documents, which were the basis for its story, appear to be forgeries. Could you hammer a little bit louder? Because we're on the air. An extensive investigation by the Monitor, that would have been nice before they printed it, wouldn't it? Revealed this. Is that allowed? Is that it? The six papers dated between 92 and 93 were in fact written within the last few months, according to chemical analysis of the ink. "We are convinced the documents are bogus," said the Monitor. Or said Paul Van Slambrook, the editor of the Monitor, "It's important to set the record straight. We're convinced the documents are bogus. We apologize to Mr. Galloway and to our readers." Mr. Galloway says he does not accept the apology. In an advertising campaign launched earlier this month, General Motors sketches an image of itself as a once wayward company chastened by consumer disaffection. 30 years ago, GM quality was the best in the world, the print ad begins. 20 years ago, it wasn't. GM now claims it has changed directions. The road to redemption has no finish line, but it does have the corner, and it's fair to say we've turned it. GM's apologizing for making crappy cars. In almost so many words. And Dateline Mystic, Connecticut. Hammer louder, sir. "The people in the Hamptons are shallow whiners who keep their kids on leashes and drive Ferraris, so why spend your vacation there?" That's the edgy, tongue-in-cheek message behind a new advertising campaign launched by the Mystic Coast and Country Travel Industry Association, supposed to lure more visitors from New York City to southeastern Connecticut. But the shot upset Mystic Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Linnea Lindstrom, who said it could hurt business and damage the good feelings that Long Islanders have about Mystic. "Mystic is a place that can stand on its own," she said. "We don't need to resort to bashing another place that's equally as wonderful as ours is. I hope the people who live in Long Island don't hold a grudge against Mystic." She said she plans to write a letter of apology that she hopes to have published in Newsday, the Long Island newspaper, ladies and gentlemen. Because you never know when you want to go back to Long Island. All right, let's get to serious stuff. Not that the apologies aren't serious, but there's disturbing news for everyone who cares about Dan Rather, ladies and gentlemen. Dan Rather's ratings have hit a new low. The longtime anchor of the CBS Evening News averaged a paltry, this is the wording of the New York Daily News, 6.5 million viewers last week, the smallest audience for the program in at least 10 years. That's 2.4 million viewers behind Nightly News with Tom Brokaw, which led the race with 8.9. And Brokaw wasn't even at the anchor desk last week. Brian Williams was. World News Tonight with Peter Jennings is also far ahead of Rather, with 8.2 million. It's the most dramatic example yet of the downward spiral in ratings for the once dominant CBS newscast, which in recent years has continued to lose ground to the other two networks. CBS officials insist they aren't pointing any fingers of blame at Rather, who replaced Walter Cronkite in 1981. And they said there is no talk inside CBS News about any changes in Rather's status. Says CBS News President Andrew Hayward of Rather, "He's full of energy and enthusiasm. He's under contract for at least another 4 years, too." Rather's newscast has now lost 4% of its audience from a year ago. Nightly News on NBC has grown by that much. Said an executive at a rival network of the CBS broadcast, quote, "They are not even a factor." Says Hayward of the broadcast, "Part of the problem is the poor performance of the early local evening news audiences at many of the CBS stations, especially in big cities like New York." That's right, blame the affiliates. "CBS News will have to be more aggressive in bringing attention to the program," he said. "I think we can move the needle with some tactical attention to what we're promoting and how we're promoting it," says CBS News President Andrew Hayward. Ladies and gentlemen, it sounds to me like another edition of Bad Days at Black Rock next here on the show.
Okay, Mike, we'll fire it up and you'll be out of here in 5 minutes.
Thanks, Gordon. I'll just... Is that Brother Rather?
Yeah, he's been here for a while.
Daniel?
Brother Wallace?
Yeah. You okay?
Fine.
Just fine? Not... prairie dog hair fine, not fat calf on a cool day fine? That's it?
Yes, sir. Please, I'm fine. I'm just, you know, setting a spell.
Mm-hmm.
Thought you were on vacation, Michael.
Well...
What, emergency at 60? And did Rooney suddenly find himself satisfied with everything?
Well, at least you haven't lost your sense of humor. No, it's just my turn to tape the rerun Gazintas.
And Gazoutas?
And Gazoutas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be back in the vineyard before nightfall. But, Daniel, weren't you on vacation too? Didn't I see Brother Roberts in your chair this week?
You saw Brother Roberts anchoring the broadcast. Yes, sir, that's truer than a cattle farmer's handshake.
Mm.
But his tight little Canadian hiney wasn't sitting in this chair. Not now. Not yet.
They'll have to pry it off of your cold, dead cheeks. Come on, Daniel. Whatever's bothering you, we've been through worse. We survived Westinghouse. Mm-hmm. We survived Brother Tish. I'm amazed the network doesn't have us on Survivor.
Brother Wallace, you've been in the vineyard. You've been having chilled lobster for lunch and boiled lobster for dinner and lobster omelets for breakfast.
Well,
this hombre's been dining on plainer fare. A plateful of crow.
Bad ratings book?
Bad ratings book? Bad ratings? I mean, they're weaker than a crippled coon dog and lower than a beggar's bed. They're pissant small and dry hole sad. They're...
So I guess they really stink.
Yes, sir. Check, double check, book it, bank it, buy it, and bottle it. Stick a fork in the CBS Evening News as we know it, Michael. It's done.
Oh, now, Daniel, listen, I'll tell Gordon we'll do the Gazintas in an hour. Let's go over to Cipriani and get something cold and alcohol-laden.
No, sir, can do.
Don't think so.
Brazos Creek duckweed is more likely to move along than I am right about now. Do you know what I saw when I came in here today?
Leslie Stahl in a leather mini? Yeah, I know. They're shooting her for...
No, sir. You know the do-not-sit-in-this-anchor-chair tarp that always covers my anchor chair when I'm not in the building?
I don't know it. I know that it exists. People talk about it, but...
Well, let them talk about this, please. When I came in here today, just to clean up a few things, that tarp was not in that chair. Anyone could have come in and slapped their mud cakes on it.
It's not an appealing picture, I'd agree, Daniel, but...
Ask yourself this, sir, please, and answer it small-town honest and big-city smart. Would that have happened if our flagship evening news broadcasts were getting more viewers than Maury Povich reruns?
I don't suppose so, Daniel.
I mean, I screamed louder than a botched capon. Let's make the broadcast a rock-hard news program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, harder than a bishop stare. Harder.
Hard, right. And they didn't go along with you, so...
No, sir. That's the problem. They did.
Mm.
They said, Daniel, you're the anchor, you're the executive producer, you've gone the extra mile for us and covered up your gray... And then, when that didn't work, you uncovered it, so really, that's two extra miles.
Yeah.
We're going to make the CBS Evening News be the broadcast of record for a world without fluff. And you know what, sir?
Hmm.
The country has put it right alongside New Coke, Edsel, and Jimmy Kimmel Live. Their continuing preference for Brother Brokaw's work tells me one thing, that they have an insatiable appetite for fluff. America's on an all-fluff diet, and here I've been Dr. Atkins saying, whoa, Nelly. Well, sir, as the kids say, Nelly don't play that.
Yeah, but who would actually sit on your chair anyway, Daniel? I mean, you need 8 security checks and a kiss on the cheek from Brother Mel just to get onto this floor.
That's not the point, Brother Wallace.
I thought that was the point. Brother, rather look on the bright side. Maybe it's not that the country is rejecting the idea of a news broadcast that's heavy on substance and light on the lightweight. Maybe, and I mean this in only the most complimentary way, maybe they're just tired of you.
Maybe. I've actually considered that possibility, Michael. But we won't know for sure until the new Dan Rather gets a sampling. the news.
We'll be doing celebrity profiles. Ion America will own Lacey Peterson's story. We'll do lifestyles and health, and in short, we'll be a broadcast that Connie Chung would be proud to come back to.
You're not...
Figure of speech.
Well, I guess it could work, Brother Rather.
Michael, it better. Because someday, some way, I gotta rebuild the trust and confidence that are vital to my continued commitment to this job.
Mm-hmm. The trust and confidence of the American people in...
My own trust and confidence that the do-not-sit-on-this-anchor-chair tarp will at all times, in fact, cover the anchor chair.
I have faith in you, Daniel. You need anything, you let somebody know.
Thank you, sir. Have a good gazindus.
And all the past
Ladies and gentlemen, this quote has bounced around the internet, but apparently authoritatively, from the Haaretz newspaper in Israel, which is a reputable newspaper, of the meeting between President Bush and Mahmoud Abbas, the Prime Minister of Palestine. By the way, I raised the question a couple weeks ago why he is identified, Mahmoud Abbas is identified as, also known as Abu something. I'm blanking on his Abu, on his Abu-ness. And a lot of listeners wrote in to say Abu is an honorific in Arabic that means father of, so it's a customary to refer to the father of the eldest son as. And my question is, fine, but of all the Arabs in the news, why is he the only one identified with the AKA? That's my question. Well, you know, there's plenty of Arabs in the news that have eldest sons, aren't there? Anyway, according to Haaretz, Bush promised to speak with Ariel Sharon about the he said nobody can speak to or pressure Sharon except Americans. According to Abbas, immediately thereafter, Bush said, quote, so this is Haaretz newspaper quoting Mahmoud Abbas, the Prime Minister of Palestinian Assembly. Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then he instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. And now I am determined to solve the problem in the Middle East. If you help me, I will act, and if not, the elections will come, and I will have to focus on them. Unquote. So now you know. Now you don't even have to be on the internet, you know. The head of MI6, one of Britain's top intelligence services, Sir Richard Dearlove, secretly briefed senior BBC executives on Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction before the claim was broadcast that Tony Blair's government had ordered the sexing up of the dossier issued in September. And a remarkable revelation that goes to the heart of the row between the government and the BBC. Broadcasting sources have told the Observer newspaper, Dearlove suggested that Syria and Iran posed a greater threat to world security than Iraq. But you see, God didn't tell him that, so that's... Joseph C. Wilson, the retired United States ambassador whose mission to Niger in early 2002 helped debunk the claims that Iraq had tried to obtain uranium there for nuclear weapons, has said for the first time publicly that U.S. and British officials ignored his findings and exaggerated the public case for invading Iraq. Wilson said the false allegations Iraq was trying to buy uranium oxide from Niger about 3 years ago were used by President Bush and senior administration officials as a central piece of evidence to support their assertions that Iraq had reconstituted its nuclear weapons program. It really comes down to the administration misrepresenting the facts on an issue that was a fundamental justification for going to war, Wilson told the Washington Post. It begs the question, what else are they lying about? From the Telegraph, a conservative newspaper in London, Tony Blair did harden up the controversial claim that Iraq's weapons of mass destruction could be ready within 45 minutes. The Foreign Office has disclosed the original assessment was less specific from the intelligence services, saying some chemical and biological weapons could be delivered to units within 45 minutes of an order being issued. That wording was not repeated in the dossier. The dossier said they could be were deployable within 45 minutes of an order to use them. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is all, it's either too big an elephant or too few blind men, because it's very hard to know what's going on in Iraq right now. On one hand, Senator Pat Roberts, just back, chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, says it's very heartening. The symphony orchestra played for the first time in 30 years, played the national anthem, people stood and cried. On the other hand, another British newspaper reports that the water and electricity in Baghdad, it's kind of hot there right now, were down by 40% this week, and that the streets run with human waste. Pardon me, I know you're eating. And, you know, it would be important to figure out what the real picture is if we were, if we really cared and if we were planning to stay for a while. But no.
The eagle landed in Kabul with a gun to put some bad guys and beardos on the run. Now they're fighting again.
to say when it's time for Old Glory to move on. Move on, spurs are jangling, put the pedal down. The troops are feeling mighty put upon. Oh, the bad guys are in hiding, our job is almost done, so pack it up. This country's moving on. Oh, Baghdad was not a happy town till our boys pulled a certain statue down. Oh, we ain't found weapons yet, and Hussein we'll never get. So it's time for Old Glory to move on. Move on, time's wasting, there's other fish to fry. The crabgrass is crowding out the lawn. Oh, the bad guys are in hiding, our job is almost done, so wave goodbye. This country's moving on. Oh, America wants what's good for you. Whether you're a Palestinian or Jew, so get that peace deal made. We're heading for the shade till it's time for Old Glory to move on. Move on, can't be staying, 'cause it's almost football time. Let the brains move in, we're packing up the brawn. Oh, we're in for the duration, just so it don't take too long, 'cause it sure looks like this country's moving on. Yes, it sure looks like this country's moving on. Moving on.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, a week ago right now, I was sitting in a lovely restaurant watching a long, leisurely twilight over the Vltava River, the river that divides the castle side of Prague from Old Town. But you know what? I'd rather be here. And so I was, but I'm going to leave and not go back to Prague. That concludes this edition of Le Show. The program does return next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, across North America via Sirius satellite radio, and around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like tax deductions for Botox in this country if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions. It originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.